There's a world out there, you gotta see it, we'll show you how. The planet's at your fingertips, so get out and see it now. There is a whole world right outside your door. So if you've got the world waiting for you, what are you waiting for? Get out and see the world because you can. Still have the freedom to travel. Get out and see the world because you can. Get out and see the world because you can. Get out and see the world because you can. There's a whole world waiting for you. What are you waiting for?
p.m. Pacific time, also 6:55 p.m. Eastern time. Today we're pre-recording our show, so if you're listening and you want to contact our guest, or if you have any questions regarding the show, please feel free to contact me at my personal website, www.freedomtotravelshow.com. That's www.freedomtotravelshow.com, or you can also write to BBS with a comment through my site. I am the executive producer and host of a television series called The Freedom to Travel Show. And briefly, I'm going to explain. It's a travel series where I will bring a guest that's disabled to a travel destination that's completely accessible. And in each show, I not only highlight my guests' achievements and attitudes around their disability, I also will educate my viewers on their disability. So we're raising awareness. This radio program is an extension of it in that we are traveling, but not in a literal sense. Instead, we're going to be traveling into our hearts, enhancing our love, connection, and understanding of one another. This is going to be a journey into a heightened awareness or a new perspective or outlook on issues of disabilities, a voyage taking you into a new dimension of yourself, which will create a natural shift of awareness and nourish the part of you that may have felt empty before. Today, I'm very proud to introduce to you my special guest, Sanford Rosenthal, executive director and also author of a book called Behind Our Eyes, Stories, Poems, and Essays from Writers with Disabilities. Welcome, Sanford.
Thank you, Cindy. It's a pleasure to be here. I guess I should be saying hello to planet Earth since we're on the internet.
This is true. This is a lot of people are going to hear our show today. I have a lot of questions for you, and I want to get started on them pretty quick because I after you and I had talked originally, Sanford, I just came up with so many interesting questions that I had because.
Uh-oh, now I'm in trouble.
I never really asked the personal questions to people who were blind before, and I think that my readers are really going to enjoy this. So, first of all, Sanford, how old are you?
Well, if anyone wants to know, I'm 58.
Okay. And I said earlier, Sanford is blind. This is your disability, and were you born blind, Sanford?
Well, not exactly. I actually drove a car when I was a teenager I got my license when I was 16, and I stopped driving when I was 26.
Oh, wow. So when did you know you were losing your eyesight?
Actually, it was when I was 10 years old. I went for a routine eye examination, and the doctor told my parents, and then my parents told me that I was going blind. I mean, I always thought that things were a little strange for me, but I didn't really know officially until I was age 10 that I would be going blind, and that I was going blind.
And so how old were you when they actually knew you were going to go blind?
Well, when I was 10, I went for that eye exam, and I would say that...
Oh, okay. You were 10, and that's when you were also told about it.
But I really wasn't legally blind until I became a teenager, probably. I mean, I'm looking back now, and I would say I probably was, you know, in the teenage years when I really became legally blind.
Right, right. So your parents, immediately upon them hearing that you were going to be losing your eyesight, they told you immediately, or did they wait a few years?
No, maybe they waited a few days or a few weeks. I'm not sure. But they told me pretty soon.
Oh, I see. I understand. Okay, so for you to actually begin to... First of all, how did they make this diagnosis?
Well, when I went for a routine eye exam, they tell you to look at the chart and put the stethoscope, not the stethoscope, the eye equipment. He looks into your eye, and he was seeing behind my eyes, and, you know, it looked like there was retinal atrophy going on, and he was able to determine... For me, I mean, I already knew that at night, I couldn't see at night. I mean, I even remember as an infant crying in the dark. And then my uncle brought over this lighted lamp that was like a merry-go-round. It brought light in my room. I mean, I remember a lot of things, even figuring out on my own how to get to the bathroom when I'm 2 years old by holding on to the wall and telling my mother about this. And she just said, oh, yeah. I mean, she didn't really give me a lot of credit. She didn't know I was blind at night. So,
right.
I mean, you know, I was figuring out a lot of things on my own.
So at night, your sight was not so great, and you picked up on that at a very young age.
Well, that was the first thing to go, yeah. My eyesight at night wasn't there, yeah.
Huh.
That was the first thing.
So you were legally blind at about the age of 26, and you had already driven and everything by then.
I was probably legally blind more about age 16, probably 17, somewhere around there. Oh, so
huh.
I guess I'm confusing you. Well, life has always been confusing for me. You see, when I went for my eye test to get my license to drive, they told me to look through the machine and to see the letters in front of you, and I was able to do that. What I could not do was see on the periphery, but they didn't test me for that.
Oh.
And I couldn't see at night. They didn't test me for night vision. But you see, I was better. When I drove a car, I had headlights. I could drive better than I could walk.
Oh, I see, because of the light.
Yeah, so I mean, I know it's even confusing for me to try and tell people about all this. Believe me, it was even more confusing for me growing up. But, you know, I'm happy. And, you know, things either make us, we either get stronger for something or we fall, you know, by the wayside. I feel all these things made me a stronger person.
Ah, I see. So you began to know, or you learned that you were going to go blind at the age of 10, which must have been really difficult for you throughout your teenage years. Were you always constantly wondering, oh my gosh, is this the last day? Is this the last? Or was it so progressive that you knew it was coming, but you didn't know how far away it was?
Yeah, I really didn't know how far away it was.
Right.
I didn't know that.
It didn't happen overnight.
No.
And you told me in one of our previous conversations, there's an actual diagnosis for this. And what is that called?
RP.
RP?
Yeah, retinitis pigmentosa.
And how common is this?
How common is it? Well,
yeah, did you know?
There are thousands of people in the country, probably millions around the world, who have it.
Wow. Do you have a seeing eye dog?
Well, I did. You know, I get very attached. I like to, you know, try to have an emotional side to me and bring it out, and especially dogs, the way they give you their unconditional love. So it's tough on me because, you know, you get a dog when he's trained, he's, you know, roughly 2 years old, and then after 7 years, now he's about 9 years old, and he's slowing down. I mean, he'd be a great pet, but
yes.
When you have a guide dog for the blind, it's a work animal, just like a police dog. They don't keep police dogs work until they're 10 or 20 years old. You know,
right.
A guide dog, by the time they're 9 years old, they're slowing down. They're not, you know, ready at a snap of the finger. So a lot of people like to start retiring their dogs at nine. Especially, you could retire a dog at nine, but usually still healthy, and a lot of people want to adopt a pet that's really well-trained. So, you know, you're constantly going back to the dog school to get a new dog. So I had one good dog that really, you know, went far with me. We traveled a lot. And then I had another dog from a different school just for a few weeks. I sent him back. Then it's hard to explain. In other words, I went to two different dog schools. The first dog school, I had a good dog. The second dog, I went to a dog school. It didn't work out. I sent him back. So then I went back to the first dog school, and I had another really good dog for a long time. And then when he was ready to be retired, I tried that second dog school again, where I got the dog that wasn't so good. And again, I got another dog that wasn't so good. So, I haven't had a guide dog for probably over 10 years now.
Ah, now, do you live independently?
Yes, I live independently down in the greater Fort Lauderdale, Florida area. I say greater Fort Lauderdale because most people know that city, but there are like, you know, 20 other cities in the county. And so I'm in the city of Margate, which is near Fort Lauderdale.
Now, is there a large blind community there?
Well, I live in a condo complex. There might be a couple of elderly people who were blind. I don't even know. But, I mean, in the general community, like, there is a lighthouse for the blind, so you'll see more people going there to take classes and computers and things like that. And I know another organization, a learning center for the blind, and they do more activities, fun activities together. But again, they attract a lot of the senior citizens. I guess there are communities of different, we have different organizations helping the persons with disabilities, such as Center for Independent Living. I mentioned the Lighthouse for the Blind. There's this Broward Parks and Recreation. They do tandem bike riding, in other words, tandem, two-seated bicycles for people who are blind. I was involved with the sailing program for persons with disabilities. But I don't know, I think in Florida down here, I don't usually see a lot of people walking in the streets. I think, like, when I lived in certain other areas, like in California or New York, it seemed that people were more interested in seeking out activities and doing things. That's my feeling about it.
In California?
Well, I lived in California and San Francisco. Let's see, where I was in so many places. I'm saying that in some
places. Wait, sorry, Sanford, I got to ask you something. Earlier,
yes.
You said I don't usually see people, and I thought that was really interesting.
Oh.
What do you mean by you can't see, though?
Well, I'm usually caught like that by a lot of people when I'm talking to lots of people. They say, "What word did you use?" So I tell them that I don't try and invent a new vocabulary. I use every word that everyone else uses. And so, like, if I'm saying, if someone's telling me they were watching TV, and they might say, I want to put that show on, so I'll say, oh, yeah, I'll watch that now. I have a TV in my room, in my bedroom, in my living room, on my balcony, and in my kitchen. Now, I can't see it, realistically, but I don't change my words. I guess I could hear it. I don't change any words. I use all the words everyone else uses.
So when you're watching TV, for lack of a better word, and
yeah,
I understand that because I have a lot of friends in wheelchairs, and we all say, well, let's run over to the so-and-so, or, you know.
Yeah, if you're in a wheelchair, don't you say you're going for a walk?
Let's, you guys want to walk over to the so-and-so? Yeah, you just don't think much of it.
Yeah, sure. You don't start changing your vocabulary.
Right, right. Yeah. And one of the things I wanted to ask you is, and I thought this is really, you know, I think because you could see for so many years of your life, you still can picture colors and shapes and things like that, right? You haven't lost that?
No, it's in my memory.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the reason why I say that is because, for example, with people who are disabled, or I'm sorry, not disabled, paralyzed, like myself, my lower, from my knees down, they're paralyzed. And I have literally, the message doesn't go from my brain down to my feet. So it's like I can't really remember what it feels like to run.
Oh, no?
I mean, I can walk, but I can't really remember what it feels like to run. I can in my upper body, but not my feet.
What age were you when you lost that bottom
18.
Nerve? So you,
18.
I bet you dream of running or walking, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I do. That's interesting. But, you know, in my dreams, it's so not an issue anyways, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't really think about the fact that, oh, look, I'm running. I don't even think about that. I don't even know if it's so much that I'm running, except for that I know what I'm doing. I don't know. I think it's really interesting. So when you talk about watching the TV and you hear the stories, now, are you getting the full effect of what's happening?
Well, the real full effect is obtained by using those, what do they call it, descriptive videos. You know, like in the library, they have these movies, all kinds of movies, you name it, where they take the movie and then between people talking, they'll add description and say, oh, she smiled, or she is wearing this color dress and that. They add description. So that's the best way of getting an idea of what you're seeing in a movie. But, you know, if you're not, then I can't watch the movies with a lot of action. Like, usually young people, in general, they like action movies. So I lose a lot with that, unless someone is there telling me some, you know, key details. But, of course, there are some movies where you don't lose much at all. Like, let's say you're watching a movie in a courtroom where pretty much, you know, the lines are explaining everything. Or how about a romantic movie where you're understanding love and emotions? You know, that also you can understand pretty good.
Right, right. That's so interesting to me. These are interesting questions because I often wonder, you know, do blind people go to movies? And if you do, have you ever gone to a movie that was, quote-unquote, accessible for the blind?
Well, I know when I first got my guide dog, I wanted to really, you know, enjoy life because the dog helped make it easier to walk around and everything. I was thrown out of movies, and that's when a lot of I ended up getting into a lot of newspapers and TV and radio spots. So, yeah, I mean, I like to go to movies, but I think the biggest problem for me and a lot of other people has not been us as much as the general public handicapping us. So when you can go back to the gym, like I was a member of the Jack Lane Health Spa in New York, and I showed up with my... A month after I stopped driving, I had a guide dog within a month. So
wow.
I returned back to the Jack Lane Health Spa, and they proceeded to usher me out, you know.
Because of the
dog.
You
had to go home or something. So I had to go to the
Was it
Life
because
Commission.
Of the dog?
I had the dog, and then they knew. They didn't know I was blind before. But once I had the dog, it was like a flag.
Oh, I see. So you brought they tried to bring the dog in, and they're like, wrong. It wasn't so much that they didn't know the laws as it was that they didn't think you were blind.
Well, they didn't think I was blind, but they said, you know, you can't, number one, you can't come with a guide dog, and you can't come in if you're blind. So I couldn't win. But I went to the Human Rights Commission in New York City, and they went to bat for me, and I did get into the health spa. It took about a year.
Oh, that's too bad. And did you have to pay a lot of money to have that whole process go through so that you could go to the gym?
In New York City, they had what they called the Human Rights Commission, and they didn't charge for their services.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, actually, what has happened now is that the law is stronger now, so people can actually go to lawyers and actually probably make a lot of money on it. So I think a lot of these establishments have cleaned up their act, and they don't want to be sued. So you don't find as much, but it's still there. I'm sure if you had a phone line now with people able to call in, I'm sure that they would tell us their horror stories too.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right about that. I can't imagine. So okay, gosh, this is so interesting. So you have dreams, and you can not only visualize colors and shapes and things like that, you remember what color looks like, and you also dream in color.
Yes.
And that hasn't changed for you throughout the years, or?
I think there are less vivid color dreams at this point than there were,
mm-hmm.
I think. Yeah.
And one of the other things, I'm kind of jumping around here, but I've asked myself some questions, but they're so interesting to me, and I definitely want to get to your book in a minute here. And mention all about that and what inspired you. But in one of the conversations you had, and speaking on the dog level, you said something that based on the Jewish tradition, there are no dogs in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what your feelings are on that. You're Jewish, isn't that right?
Yeah, sure. I had strong feelings. You know, when I had my first guide dog for the blind, he went with me to Hawaii for 4 years. We lived in Israel for 2 years. And he went with me. I went through so many girlfriends. He always stayed with me. And all the loves of my life left me, or I left them, I guess. But I realized, in the end, that he was the love of my life. And I started to think how unconditional his love was for me. And I started to think to myself, what is really heaven? And it's being up there, for me, it's being up there with people, or in this case, a dog, who you love. And I felt he loved, in fact, I still think he's leading me today. I know it sounds corny, but I could tell you stories about that. But in other words, so I started talking to some rabbis and other religious leaders. And from what I ascertained, the three major religions, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, they say that there are no animals in heaven. And I'm trying to, understand all this. And I'm thinking that, a lot of people eat meat, and that's probably one of the reasons why they would say there's no animals in heaven. Plus, I also have been told that the animals do everything by instinct. They don't really think like us. But, I respect everyone's belief in religion, but if you're asking me mine, I think that animals do think, and I just, even, not only dogs.
Yeah,
I think,
have to agree.
Mm-hmm.
My personal beliefs, I think there's a lot more to, especially dogs.
Especially,
and you're right, they are man's best friend. They become your companion, and they work off of your emotions and feelings. I remember I had a dog for many, many years that could have been my firstborn child.
Mm-hmm.
And this dog, if I had a bad day, or say I got bad news of somebody passing, my grandfather or something, and I'd be crying, the dog would come up into my lap and, just show me that he was there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that was not made up in my head. This dog was very comforting. So, and, and I can understand how you said, and one of the things I wanted to also ask you that you touched on earlier was you said you had one dog that was good, and then you got another one, and you sent it back. What was it about that dog that you thought wasn't working?
All four dogs were good. I should say this, in case any of them have died and they're at the pearly gates now. I want to put a plug in. I want to tell them everybody up there, if they're judging my dog, all four were good. They belong in heaven. I want to say that. It's just that for me, at this particular time in life, I needed a dog guide that didn't mind working. And some people, just like some people, they go to work just mainly because of the money. I wanted a guide dog that loved his work. And so my first guide dog really loved his work. And the other dog from that dog school, he did his job. But then again, I don't think he really loved me. And the other two from the other dog school, they were just doing the dog job and waiting for the 5 o'clock whistle. In fact, then those guys would slouch you up even, before 5 o'clock. It just didn't work out with them. They didn't have their heart
in it. That's so funny. It's a different world what you're talking to me about. You said it, 5 o'clock. Did they literally get off work?
Well, actually, when you're a guide dog, you got to be at work 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
But I was trying to give a little analogy as to what, you know, people would understand. You know, like 9 to 5 is that work day. You know, I was trying to give a little analogy.
Now, do you think that maybe those other dogs didn't work out quite as well because you had such a strong relationship with the one?
No, I don't think that. No.
Oh. And what was it about these dogs that you said you got the sense they really weren't into their job?
Well, they all have their personalities, and, mm-hmm. you know, you're walking in the street with them, and they're just not concentrating. They're not doing a good job.
I hear you. Okay. And that's something, again, that's very interesting to me because I'm not blind, and it's you know, your world is slightly different from mine, and not scary to me because I don't know what it's like to be blind, but well, I think it's very interesting, you know, like how do you cope on a day-to-day basis? So you live independently, you don't have a dog. How do you get around?
Well, I use a cane, and I go a lot of places with my cane, whether it's walking in the street or on the bus, or I've been using all kinds of public conveyances.
Are they very helpful with you?
People in general?
Yeah.
You mean? Yeah, most people are helpful, yeah.
So let's say if you came to, and I don't know how often this may happen to you, if you say you came to a street light and you wanted to cross and maybe you didn't hear it beeping or something, because that's generally how you would tell, isn't that right?
Well, I had to have a lot of those beepers put in. Actually, that's another story. And they're helpful, yeah. But, of course, the wider the street, the harder it is to cross to get to where you want to go.
The wider? Oh, sure. Because you gotta know how far about, you got to have an idea of how far you're going, right?
Well, it's hard sometimes to walk straight, or sometimes the street isn't straight because the street is coming to an angle. Not every street is 90 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
That could be a problem when you start to walk straight, and in reality, the street you're crossing, you need to really veer off right 10 degrees. I mean, it can be difficult, especially a lot of drivers aren't always helpful. I mean, I remember I was walking across about a year ago, and I was halfway across, and then the lady in the car said, "Oh, it's my turn to go now." And she left me standing in the middle of traffic.
Are you kidding me?
You meet these idiots. You got to have a thick skin. I mean, it's amazing how people are so selfish.
Yeah. One of the things you said at the beginning of our conversation that I thought was really interesting, and also one of the ongoing themes for people with disabilities, not just those that are blind, but you said, you can either get stronger or fall.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds to me like you made a choice to get stronger, and I think that's really, really awesome. And I want to ask you one more quick question. We're going to take this a little break so you can go to the bathroom or do whatever you need to do. How do you find stuff? Like if you dropped your wallet or something, can you hear it fall? Or
I guess it depends if in the apartment and there's no music on. I suppose if I'm at a public event, it might be harder. You know, sometimes you're bombarded by all kinds of noises. If you're at a concert, you can't even hear the person next to you. I remember when I got my first guide dog, the first day or the first week, I'm trying to think, might have been the first day, I was at an Elton John concert in Madison Square Garden with that first dog of mine.
How did he like it?
It was new to him, right? It was a chance for him to make, it was either going to make him or break him, you know? And it made him.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, listen, we're going to take just a real minute and a half break to, you know, do whatever you need to do. And we'll be right back on the air with Sanford, author and executive director of Behind Our Eyes. We'll be right back.
There's a world out there, you gotta see it, we'll show you how. The planet's at your fingertips, so get out and see it now. There is a whole world right outside your door. So if you've got the world waiting for you, what are you waiting for? Get out and see the world because you can. Get out and see the world because you can. Get out and see the world because you can. There's a whole world waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Life can change, stats can turn, fate can take a twist. But you still have the freedom to travel. Get out and see the world because you can. Get out and see the world because you can.
Director, I should say, and author of a book written by 27 other authors as well called Behind Our Eyes, and I forgot the end of it. Oh, here it is, Behind Stories, Poems, and Essays from Writers with Disabilities. Let's just talk a little bit about your book, if we could, because I want to definitely get that in, and I don't want to miss out on, you know, talking about your book a little bit. What was it, Sanford? I mean, you obviously are the executive director. You're the one who came up with the idea and decided to go ahead and have this become a fruition. Can you tell me a little bit about what made you think to want to write a book like this?
Actually, I was thinking about it for many years because I saw the difference, the way the public understood and saw me. It was within 1 month that, you know, I decided to show the world who I really was, because I was waiting until I thought that I couldn't drive safely. So within 1 month, I had the guide dog, and I saw a difference in the way people treated me. And, you know, I was dealing with that, but what I didn't like was when taxi cabs refused to pick me up, so I went to the Taxi and Limousine Commission, and the newspapers picked up on that when they suspended the guy's license for a short period of time. And in movie theaters, I had to call the police to get me into the movies. Restaurants summarily threw me out, and including McDonald's. And as a result of that, signs went up across the nation. Guide dogs allowed in McDonald's. This goes back in the 70s even.
Bravo!
Well,
Here's the man, everybody. Sanford's the man.
Instead of waiting for the fight to come to me, I took the fight to them. I got on an airplane and went to the state of Hawaii. And when they threw me into the animal quarantine station in 1979, I sued the whole state. So I was the first person to do that. Eventually, the law
right
got
on.
Changed. When I went to Israel to touch the Western...
I was going
to
ask you about that. Did you visit Israel or live in Israel?
Well, when I was around 10 years old, I saw the movie Exodus with Paul Newman, and it was about these kids fleeing Europe at the end of World War II. They were, well, refugees. The parents were killed by the Nazis, and it showed how the kibbutz style was so great, being with so many people. I wanted to go to Israel, live on a kibbutz, and they tell me, you're blind, don't come. But it took me, you know, about 8 years traveling around my own country, because I left New York where I was born, and I was traveling around with my guide dog, and I said, you know what? I have enough power in myself to go, even though I'm the one they should be helping more than anyone else. I'm going to go there. And I went, and I did get onto a kibbutz, and I did do a lot of things that I was told I couldn't do. So pretty soon I didn't know what I could do. I mean, usually, you know, you take advice from people. At a certain point, I said, I can't take advice from anyone. I don't know what the real me is. At any rate, I took to myself, instead of letting the TV and the radio and the newspapers cover me with their slant on it, I wish I could write. And, well, I guess it just finally happened about, what, 30 years later.
Wow. So you decided you wanted to write, I mean, just to kind of raise awareness or to talk about issues that, you know, were bothering you or all or the above, or what was it?
I guess that I think that history repeats itself. You know, after the Civil War, the blacks made some inroads down in the South, and then it was the rights were taken away from them. It wasn't until 1964 that they got their rights back. But there's always been times when we have made progress, lots of groups of people, and then slowly the progress gets whittled away. Even today, there are, I think that a lot of persons with disabilities gained with, it was about 1994, Americans with Disability Act. Then you ask a lot of people today, and they say, gee, I don't know, how do we get a job? Where's all the great benefits? I think we got to keep on plugging away. Even when you get married, you just can't leave it to chance. You got to nurture your relationship every day. And here too, what I'm saying is that I wanted a book to talk to people. There's a lot of reasons why I wanted to have a book. I want to leave a legacy. Someday I won't be on this planet, but at least I could rest assured that I tried to put a book out there, and then maybe in 100 years from now, someone will read it. And it's not just me. We have stories to tell. I gathered altogether 27 authors to write this book. And they're in it just as much as me. It's just as much their book as it is my book. We have stories to tell. And I'm telling you, there are more stories to tell. If we wrote one book, there could be 10 more books. And that's why I wrote the book.
Oh, that's beautiful. Would you, could you read us a piece of that?
It has stories. Some of the stories are true life adventures. Some of them are fictional tales because, you know, we're people just like anyone else, and we have feelings and imagination. So some of these are fictional stories, and some are poems. One of the best stories I like, one of the poems I like, it's all interlaced throughout the book. One of our members became the editor, Marilyn Brandt Smith, and she is a prolific writer, and she was the first blind lady in the country to enter the Peace Corps back in the early 60s, and she wrote a lot. And then there's Deanna Quietwater Noriega. She's a Native American, and she wrote a lot. She also was in the Peace Corps at one time, and we have so many wonderful people in the book, and it's really hard to pick one story or one poem, but one poem I happen to like a lot is Deanna's piece. That's our Native American. And she wrote a story.
I'm sorry, what was that called?
The name of Deanna's poem that I like a lot. She wrote a lot of poems, but one of them that I like a lot is Acceptance. And I just happen to like that because that's an underlying theme of our book, in that we want people to see us behind the cane, behind the guide dog, the person on top of that wheelchair, not just to look. We don't want the public to just look at someone in a wheelchair and, like, not really give them a chance. I mean, it's nice for people to finally be polite to us and let us in where we want to go, give us access, but I like this piece by Deanna because she calls it Acceptance, and you get to see her true feelings in this poem. So
okay.
You want me to read that poem?
I would love to hear it.
Okay. Let me see here. Acceptance by Deanna Quietwater Noriega. Where was it? Yeah, here it is. See me, open your eyes and really look. I was the child sitting alone on the stairs while other children played a ball game in the yard. Because I couldn't see to play, I learned to love books. I was the young girl who washed her hair on Friday nights. because the boys who carried my heavy Braille books didn't dream that I liked to dance and go to movies. Oh, I read too fast. I anticipated the next line. I'm arrowing down on my computer. I was the young woman holding my newborn infant, with my heart full of wonder and joy. While nurses talked about me as if I weren't there, speculating about how I could ever care for that child. I was the young mother sitting alone in the school cafeteria because the teacher didn't expect me to come to mother's lunch and assigned my child to serve behind the counter. I tell you these things because I want you to understand. I am not a disability. I'm a person like you. I laugh. I cry. I sing. I dance. I cherish my friends and family. I want to be a part of my community and world. I don't need your pity. I only ask your acceptance. I only need you to open your eyes and see me. Not as a dysfunction, but as a person. A human being just like you. And that's it. That's the end.
Oh, my God. That is just gorgeous. And you know what? I see, the way you explained, you know, we want to be seen, not the wheelchair, not the cane, but hence mm-hmm. behind our eyes.
Boy, I'm so happy you liked it. I always get so scared.
I loved it.
Oh, on behalf of Deanna Quiet Ward and Marietta, I thank you very much.
Oh, absolutely. Good job, Deanna. But I wanted to also say the interesting thing here about that piece is, you know, I don't know if she's been blind her whole life or not, but being someone who was able-bodied up until the age of 18 and having to redefine myself in a world, as you said, and I'll quote, "You saw the difference in the way people treated you."
Mm-hmm.
And I also was treated very differently. And I don't think people were so much mean or nasty as they were frightened and unaware. And I still believe that. And that's why we have this radio show right now. We're going to, you know, mm-hmm. it's a disability, yeah. I mean, if I had to choose for or against, I'd probably choose against. But now that I have my disability, I wouldn't change my experience of this for the world. And, in fact, I love who I am probably more than I think I could have if I hadn't been disabled. So I really appreciate you sharing that with me, and I'm going to look forward to getting a copy of that book myself here pretty quick.
Yeah, you know, we ought to tell everybody that Behind Our Eyes, that's the name of the book, is available even if you go on Amazon.com or Borders or Barnes & Noble, or you can go right to the publisher's website, which is called www.iuniverse.com. And at that particular website, they even let you browse before you buy, and you could read some of the stories a little bit.
Actually, I think that is where I got the picture. Yep, and I like that picture a lot. There's, you know, the picture of the book has it's stars, and I think some of them are actually
27 stars. That's all the 27 authors, and you know we want to shine. By the way, the book is also being recorded for the blind and with persons with disabilities by the National Library Service across the nation. People can read this eventually, you know, for free, as well as Recordings for the Blind and Dyslexic have told us that they're going to record it. And we're also looking into the possibility of getting an audio copy for sale if people want to read it while they're driving in the cars. We're thinking about that. But in the meantime, it's available soft cover, hard cover, and also ebook.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. That is awesome. God. That's just, you have left a legacy there. I mean, all of you have, because I'm sure each story has its own poignant piece and meaningful Mm-hmm. Words. I'm looking forward to getting that. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Sanford.
But it's such a humbling experience for me because, I mean, who am I? I mean, I'm not anyone rich. I'm not anyone special. I just was a guy with a dream, you know, of making a mark in the world and telling my story and then realizing that, wait a minute, it's not just me. There are other people in the world in my shoes. And in similar shoes and stories, and I knew that something like this could happen. I didn't have all the answers. I never published a book before. I didn't know if I could get a publisher, but everything has fallen into place, and things are still going well, and there could be a bright future with more books in store for us. I don't know, but even if everything stopped now, I mean, I'm happy. I made a great, you know, well, everyone in my group made a great accomplishment.
Yeah, and you know, you said it was nice. It was nice because there was someone else in your shoes. And I'd just like to point out with that comment that I believe, you know, from the year 2000, it was estimated at 54 million Americans registered as disabled. We have a large, like, it's the largest minority group. And so there are a lot of people in our shoes, and it's interesting how quiet we've all remained because of the fact that, you know, it's a frightening topic. To people who don't understand it, I guess it would be like being told you had cancer or something. You know, it's a frightening concept. And it's also, you know, got its own negative connotations. Gosh, what if I couldn't run? What if I couldn't see? What if I couldn't hear? Those are all very frightening concepts. But I think once we come to grips with who we are and identifying with our heart and our consciousness, we become not just the disability, we become these amazing, like you said, and I loved it, you know, you're stronger for it.
Yes, indeed.
And
because
this
is what makes people different. They have personality, and we all have trials and tribulations, and especially as you go forward, even the best, the person with the silver spoon, you know, a lot of people think, oh, if only I had money, all my problems would go away. No, money will bring other problems. Other people say, if only I could have a wife. You know, wives bring more problems. So every step of the way, you're going to have problems. That goes with the territory. Right?
Well, I caught that. Wives bring more problems. Speaking of which, you are not married, are you?
well, no. No, I've never been married, and I probably have a few reasons.
You've never been married.
No. I probably have a few
reasons.
Yeah,
I want to hear those. Sorry.
Well,
there's an echo on our conversation here, so.
Oh, what are we doing?
Sorry if I
call back or something?
No, we'll just have to deal with it. But, so that's why I keep interrupting you, so bear with me. I'm sorry. But yes, we had talked previously, and we talked about you not having been married, and you had mentioned a few things or a few reasons why you believed you never got married.
Yeah.
And those
number
would be?
One, I think number one, we start to believe something, and then our past, it becomes our past. As time goes on, and we look back, it's our past. And even though we have a future in which anything is possible, that past stays with us and actually becomes our future. And we don't really have a future. We start replaying the past. And it's just, we think it's our future. We think we're in the future. But often, our future is just different names. Like whether you're dealing with failure with a girlfriend or a wife, maybe you get another girlfriend. Maybe her name is different. Well, the name of the wife is different, but certain things start playing out again unless we work on what our problems are. So the first thing is to figure out what our problems are. Now, in my case, I was always waiting to go blind. I always was. And I think that interfered with letting me go 100% with things I should have been going with 100%. For instance, with a lot of things that were emotional or heart, that, you know, are sometimes hard to deal with, I think what I did, I said, I don't have time for that. I have to deal with going blind. And then even when I did really become really blind when I was like 37, I still wasn't being all there as much as I should have been. That's what I'm thinking
you
now.
You mean
I'm
in the relationship?
What?
You mean you weren't all there as in all there for the relationship, available for
yeah.
the relationship.
Yeah, sometimes I have trouble hearing you, too. I hear the echo. But, yes, I don't think I always was given it all what I could have been. Now, in addition to that, I came from a broken family, so I think that scared me, too. You know, I loved my father, and then my parents got divorced, and things just weren't the same after that. And, you know, I grew up with my mother, and I don't think she resolved it 100%, you know, having been married and divorced. I think there were a lot of things going on. And I think, unfortunately, it interfered with my relationship. Now, add to that also, I think I met a lot of women who were curious, but also never willing to really give it all their shot. I think, that, I don't know if that happened with a lot of other people with disabilities, but I feel that I met a lot of women who were interested in going out with me and finding out more about me, but they had like a glass ceiling also. And then also, add to that, I think that in a lot of cases, when I started to feel love after 2 or 3 months, I sabotaged it. And in fact, I think I'm still guilty of that today, where I sabotage it. I mean, I had a lot of girlfriends, but unfortunately, I think I just, either I didn't give it all that it should have been, or they didn't give it all that they were supposed to give it, and somehow, you know, that part of my life never worked out.
Yeah, well, you said somehow, or you said from the beginning, you start to believe something, and even though it's your past, you bring it into your future with you. You keep replaying that until you work it out. Yeah. So are you in a relationship today?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But
mind if I ask
scared.
You something?
I'm kind of scared because I know what I always do. I sabotage. If they don't sabotage it, then I sabotage it.
I wonder, though.
Yeah?
Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, it's just I hear this echo when I talk and when you talk. I hope the audience doesn't hear the echo.
I know, me too.
Yeah.
Okay, so one of the questions I asked you in our previous conversation that I definitely wanted to ask you today is do you think that you're attractive?
Yes, I think I'm attractive. I've been told by a lot of women that I am. In fact, the other day I was in the van, you know, the trip, the paratransit car service. You know, a lot of major cities, the communities have offered paratransit. People have trouble with fixed route buses and trains. So I used this paratransit, and actually there was a woman in there, and I got in there, and she said, I could tell you're a heartbreaker. And, you know, she started being real friendly to me, and
you think overall that women find you attractive? Well, you must. From some of our conversations, you've had plenty of girls in your life, isn't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Let me explain something. When I talk about being attractive, I want to add my perspective on this. I had a friend who looked like John Lennon. Now, before John Lennon was popular, no one said he was good-looking. Once, all of a sudden, John Lennon was popular, you know, everyone said, hey, you look like John Lennon. What I'm trying to say is that too often we think we're only good-looking if we look like someone who's in politics, someone who's a singer or a movie star. And so what I'm saying is good looks, we tend to mix it up with the personality of someone famous. And what I'm saying is that good looking has to do with other things. Good looking has to do with you taking care of yourself and going to the gym or keeping fit, watching your diet, not drinking every single night and drugging. So I think that often we get mixed up about just what good looking is. In fact, not only that, but just think in the 1920s and 30s when it was the Great Depression, good looking meant you had some meat on your bones.
Yeah.
Like Mae West, you know. And so it It has to do, in fact, even in olden times, when they did statues of beautiful women, they usually had some meat on the bones. So what I'm saying
curvy.
Is that curvy. Okay, yeah, curvy. So
well,
I think that...
On a personal level, I'm hoping that style comes back.
I don't think you have to worry too much because America is aging, and as we age, you know, how does that work again? The narrow mind and the narrow waist that exchanges places, the broad mind and the narrow waist, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately.
But still,
no,
even if you're 40 or 50, or even 60, you could look, especially when you're 40, 50, and 60, you could either look 10 years younger or 10 years older than you really are just by staying healthy. So as far as good-looking is, you know, forget about these people that are comparing you to people in the news or movie stars. You could be good-looking if you keep yourself fit and go to the gym or exercise. Well, you know, then again, even some people, maybe they had accidents or something and they'll never look like a movie star, but you could be the best for who you are. And with, you know what else is important about how you look? How you feel about yourself. How you feel about others. Are you still able to love? Because it's so easy to get hurt by everyone and then start acting bitter towards other people. So if you could carry love with you, that's going to make you look so much better, too. So,
oh,
I mean, this is a great topic to talk about, but we shouldn't get hung up about, you know, being good-looking according to looking like someone who's a rock star or something like that.
Beautiful. Love that. Love that, Sanford. You're right. And so what do you find most attractive in a woman? What's appealing to you?
Well, I know what I like.
What do you like, Sanford?
Well, let me start by telling you what I miss by not seeing anymore.
Okay, let's do that. Let's get on the line, brother.
All right, I guess I miss that wiggle in the walk. Okay.
Well, fair enough. You know, I don't mean to laugh. I'm not laughing at you because I could understand how that would be.
Yeah.
That would be a loss. But at the same token, I giggle because it's very masculine.
Yeah. No. Yeah, let's face it. I mean, I used to love taking advantage of what my eyes could see. And there's a certain poetry in motion for me.
I love that.
Watching. In fact, there have been times when between girlfriends, I've even become problematic. What I'm saying is that in my case, I still have the feelings in my hands and my body and feelings in my mind and my emotions. So, you know, when I meet a woman who I feel we have a meeting of the minds and we could talk and I get into her and she gets into me, and after that, the hugging and the kissing, it can make up for the loss of the sight as far as the attractiveness goes. I mean, I have no problems when I'm involved with someone who I really care about, and I might add, she cares about me.
Yeah, the
feeling is mutual. And I might add something else. It has to be mutual, but I might add something else. When you are with certain women, they do kiss differently. And you've noticed.
Haven't been kissing women, but it comes from a spot within us. I mean, we're all individual, so that's what makes getting out there and experiencing the world such an interesting and beautiful thing to be able to do.
But there's the physical part of the other person, whether it's the kiss or the hug, and then it increases exponentially when you really can feel for someone and also feel needed. I think as a person with a disability, I know as far as myself, I like to feel needed because I know I can't drive them anywhere anymore. But
right.
So yeah, that's why I really care about being needed in some way. So you add it all together, and that's what makes me happy.
Ah, very nice. And I think that's not. I think that's a male quality as well. You know, usually not all men, and I'm not saying generally speaking, but I think that's normal. Not just, you know, I'm sure being blind probably accentuates it slightly because you may be a little more sensitive, which would be natural. But it's a pretty common trait for men.
But don't you want to be needed too?
Absolutely. Yeah, I guess I do. I want to be maybe not needed so much as honored or respected or desired. But that's maybe the female thing too. I hate to do this to you. I got to cut you off, Sanford. But I have to say I have totally enjoyed this conversation. These silly questions that you probably thought were ridiculous have a lot of meaning to people who aren't blind. And also, sharing this book with us, it sounds like something I think we could all, you know, gain a lot of perspective and meaning in our lives.
Let's tell them my website.
What's that?
www.behindoureyes.com.
Okay. And again, his book is Behind Our Eyes, Stories, Poems, and Essays from Writers with Disabilities. And again, Sanford, I want to thank you so much for your time and all your heartful suggestions and all your insight. And remember, listeners, all the information you're going to need will be on my site as well, www.freedomtotravelshow.com. Again, that's Freedom to Travel Show, www.freedomtotravelshow.com or BBS Radio. Also, I'm going to be archiving the shows. And that will be also on my site. So if you're interested in hearing some of the other guests' achievements and stories, please go to my site. They should all be on there pretty quick here. Many blessings of love to all of you, and you especially today, Sanford. We'll see you all, listeners, same time, Sundays, every other week on BBS Radio. And don't forget, get out and see the world because you can. There's a whole world waiting for you. What are you waiting for?